Hello and welcome to the Barton Legal Podcast. I'm Bill Barton, a solicitor who lives and breathes construction and engineering law. At Barton Legal, we help clients in the UK and around the world on everything from litigation and arbitration to drafting and negotiating contracts. And in this podcast, we unpack the latest legal trends and problems facing the industry, providing you with straight-talking insights to help break down these complex legal questions. So, let's get on with today's episode. Hi everybody, I'm Bill Barton from Barton Legal, and today I'm very pleased that I'm joined in person by Dale Rhodes. Hi Dale.
Hiya.
This is a podcast, so I've now got to paint the picture. How do I know and who is Dale Rhodes? Well, it would be far too grand to say that Dale is my tailor, although that would be an accurate description. Dale Rhodes is a bespoke tailor for suits. And that's how I know Dale, because I've bought suits from him. I have to confess that today I'm actually wearing jeans, a T-shirt, a checked shirt. But Dale looks magnificent in a beautiful suit with a waistcoat with five buttons, I think, with a lovely orange tie, white shirt. So he's a perfect embodiment of his skill. So, Dale, introduce yourself. How would you describe what you do as a tailor?
Basically, as a tailor, you provide silks that are a better fitting, a better fabric, but it's the top level of menswear of a man's suit. But I mean, what I do is I generally create a presentation. So I'll go out and meet someone and just find out exactly what they want, get into the mind, find out what they need to wear the suit for, which is important, how many suits they've got in the wardrobe, at what stage they're at, and then get a bit of a briefing. And these days, I mean, you've got, it's changed. You can go on Pinterest, you can get loads of ideas what you might like. Then I've got to blend it in with what would work for that customer as well, because daft as it sounds, depending on your size, if you're short, if you're tall, there's all sorts of things we need to do as a tailor to try and to make it look right, you know, like the subliminal little touches. And so as a tailor, starting again, I would say, yeah, we provide great quality clothing that looks right for the right event, the right occasion, for the right people.
And you've also got great people skills as well, haven't you? Well, I think you have, because somebody comes in and I presume they say, I want a suit. I mean, how many people come in and have a clear idea, and how many people, you know, because you've got lots of different cloths, haven't you, and weights?
I think it breaks into, you've got two categories. You've got someone who's a suit virgin, who's absolutely no idea, and they come in and every option you ask them, how many buttons would you like, two or three? It's a big decision for them. And then you get other people, like, and I'm particularly strong in the law, you'll get people where even as a pupil, they'll have seen what other people are wearing, so they've already got a mind map, a picture of what they want. So they're easier to do. And obviously, a guy who's had a few suits will understand what he likes about one suit and what he doesn't like about another suit. So straight away, you've got a common denominator or somewhere to start talking about. But you do, you get everything from someone who's had Savile Row suits that think they know more about it than the tailor does, to someone who's got completely no idea. And when you go back to my personality, I think coming from Yorkshire, you've got to sort of have a bit of a personality to survive, haven't you? And then also, being a Yorkshire man, I do a lot of business in London, and they love the Yorkshire thing, because Yorkshire's a trustworthy sort of a part of the world, and also it's just a little bit quirky. And it got my London clients away from the Savile Row snobbery view of having a suit's a personal experience, and if you can really open somebody up and talk to them, you can give them a lot better job than if you're actually sort of telling them what they should be having, which isn't always the case. And especially with fashion now, it's fast moving, isn't it? I mean, I've got a wardrobe full of suits, and if you order a good made-to-order, ready-made or bespoke suit, whichever category it's in, they last a lot longer because they're from better fabric. But then they stay in your wardrobe forever, and as fashions change, the suits go out of fashion. For example, the one thing I do talk a lot about is James Bond, because you look at Sean Connery, I thought the ultimate Bond, with his enamel lapels and his sharp-fitting suit.
Yeah.
And then you go across to Roger Moore, and he's got his flared trousers and his 70s look. And then, then we move along, and we've got Pierce, who looks pretty good, and I think his Brioni suits, Italian suits. And then we go back to Tim Dalton, I want a fan of, smart suits. And finally, we've got the Daniel Craig, who wears suits that, in my opinion, are too small. But that's the look and the short jacket. So if you think about that, you get an idea of how tailoring subtly evolves, even for your smart, quintessential English look. It changes rapidly. And I think quite a lot as a tailor, you've got to, if you've got a guy who's older, they want to still be a little bit on trend without looking like they're too on trend. So it's just the narrow margins of making them look like they've got a sharp new suit as opposed to something that's a little bit dated.
I think it's really interesting that you look at the James Bond. I'm a massive... I've got a huge man crush on Daniel Craig, and I think he's the Bond. But I do agree with you. He looks really sharp in his suits. But I always look and think, if I was wearing that suit, I would constantly be worried that the button's going to pop up off, because they just look a bit sort of tight, or the jacket looks a bit short, or the sleeve's a bit short. But I've always thought, well, you know, that's just for cinematic purposes. But I do get you. Unfortunately, I can also remember going to the cinema as a kid and watching Roger Moore and the others. And whilst fashion may go around, please save us from flares. I really couldn't go back to flared trousers. So buttons, I always have a fascination with. So why on the cuffs of a suit? Why do some people have three and some people have four buttons? Is there actually any difference, or is it just somebody's got three buttons and someone's got four buttons? Is one meant to be better? Is one meant to show something?
No, going back to the day when there were a tailor in every village and you'd go to see your tailor, people used to have a little bit more, there were a lot more options. So people would have sometimes a one button, two button, or you'd have two buttons in a space and another two buttons, because as your tailor's doing it and he's working with his hands, it's easy for him to play around. Whereas these days where things have got a little bit more factory made, everything's got to be, you know, either a four or a three.
Mm.
I prefer a four button on a all the time, but I'd only go three button on a shorter guy. That's the only time I'd probably go for a three button cuff. Some like real cuffs where you can actually, a surgeon's cuff where you can unbutton the cuff, which is great, but you've got to get the sleeve length cock on. And as we spoke when we were measuring your suit, we were talking about the shirt sleeve and the jacket sleeve, and a lot of people will not get the shirt sleeve right, so then it's difficult to get that right amount of cuff. So it just depends how far, and then again, going to tailor-made, your tailor's thinking about all this, whereas if you're buying something off the peg, you're going to go and they're going to give you the nearest suit that fits you. And if you work it out, they used to do short, regular and long fittings, and these days, that's less the case. And obviously, every time you get taller or shorter, your sleeve incrementally gets shorter or longer, and if you're putting it on the wrong frame, it's just not going to fit.
Yeah.
And then you alter it, so it ends up being a badly altered attempt of looking bespoke if you're not careful. Now, some people are lucky enough that they can just go in and look fantastic with an off-the-rack suit, but that is the thin end of the wedge.
That's quite rare, isn't it? I mean, to walk into a shop, whatever you're buying, and just to pick something off a rail and it fits perfectly. And it's again interesting, as I said, you're here in a lovely crisp white shirt and orange tie, but a suit needs more. And do you think that these are sort of skills that we, do you think it's a skill that we're losing, the advice from a tailor? I mean, I'm not saying I had a tailor when I was younger, but as I've progressed through my career, I've had suits from you. I once had a dinner suit made in Birmingham. And you get great advice from people like you. Do you think that's something that people are lacking?
Yeah, definitely. We once had an alteration contract for one of the top stores in the UK. And when they opened up a new branch in Manchester, they didn't have anybody in that selling suits who understood tailoring. So it's a profession, it's sort of dying out. I mean, that knowledge has gone, hasn't it? So you need to work in it for quite a while and have a passion for it. And I think a lot of it is knowing when something looks right. You know, when you stand back, if someone's wearing a great fitting suit, you look at it and you think, that suit looks great, but you don't know why. And it's the sum of all the parts. It's the fact that someone's got the shoulder set right and the waisting's right. There's lots and lots of measurements you take on the suit, and there's lots of style options, and then you've got to get the right fabric. I mean, some fabrics will work for some people and not for others. You wouldn't put a big bold stripe on a shorter guy. Do you know, sometimes you need a bigger frame to do it. So a lot of advice on tailoring is like, even with that, you'd be thinking, well, what fabric will work for you? And is that a great choice? And some people want the suits to be too fussy, and I think less is more. Perhaps on this suit I've got a gold lining. Right. It's a nice touch. But you don't need to have, you know, like a gold lapel and fancy buttons and fancy
designs. Oh, and that is a very modern thing, isn't it? I see that on suits. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, where they've got different colours on the stitching on the buttonholes. But you're quite right. I see a lot of people in suits that I just sort of pass me by. Excuse me, because the suit doesn't stand out either as a suit or make that person stand out in any way. And yet when you see somebody in a suit that is sharp, it's remarkable how it stands out, isn't it? You see somebody, you think, a friend of mine, he had a suit on. I actually went and asked him and said, oh, you know, where is that? Because it really did look sharp. And it's a shame, I think, that people aren't looking to make their suit look special. Is that fair? People are sitting right, accepting that it's a suit. It's, you know.
I think you've got to invest a little bit of time in anything that's important. And, you know, I used to say to my customers when they said, I can't afford a suit from you, I used to say, you can't afford not to. And then I'd have a bit of rip about saying, so you're wearing shocking and a bit of banter and maybe selling the suit. But, you know, once you've got one suit right as a template, you're up and running. So, you know, once you've had one suit, if you could go in with one of my suits to any tailor in the world and say, copy that suit, and at least they'd get the measurements right, the rest of it I can't say.
That's subject to our body shape.
Then again, if you're wearing a suit and you went in with one of my suits, they'd have the old template then that think, well, maybe I'll just give them an extra inch on the waist. They've done the hard work, if you know what I mean. But I do think it's worth just every young professional person getting involved in a career should at least spend a little bit of time learning on what works and then carry that through. And I mean, a lot of it's simple, just a dark grey or a dark navy or a dark silk. Like you've mentioned, a white shirt. White shirts are dead simple. You can't go wrong. They go with everything, and it's the sum of all the parts that look right. But just invest a little bit of time and look at what other people... I mean, it's perfect with TV. Like you've said, we've got suits, the series suits.
Yeah.
Some of them suits are cracking. You've got Mad Men. You've lots of things that once you get your head around what you're looking for, just keep watching what people are wearing.
We were watching Designated Survivor recently, and that's got some really sharp suits on.
Yeah.
So what... I don't know if you can talk about your customers. What, you know, who's been a really good sort of customer for you, good advert for you in terms of your suits?
You'll find in any profession, you get a kingmaker. You get the guy who's just going to give you a leg up because they're a nice guy. So I've been lucky enough. In fact, one guy is a mutual friend of ours, Owen Lawrence.
Okay,
he's larger than life. He knows everybody. You make him a suit, and before you know it, you've lots of people contacting, saying, your friend of Owen's can have, you know, can I meet you? And some people go out there, and I think if you put it at universe, you get back, and I think these people always get back, you know, in a roundabout way. But I have had a few of them, but yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's probably maybe 10, I've probably got 10 like him out of 1,000 clients
who yeah.
really put me out there and had a bit of a laugh and mentioned it. And yeah, I mean, that's just a people thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's people they know and anything else. What about sort of celebrity or famous people who've had your suits? And not to say that Owen, you know, Owen, love him to bits. And Owen, but I'm not sure that Owen is. Owen's famous in sort of construction of law, but I'm not sure why. So if you had celebrity, do you get celebrity or?
I've done a little bit of celebrity. I tend to avoid it because they're very difficult to catch up with. They're just busy people.
Yeah.
I used to do footballers years ago and you'd pitch up and they'd have all left training. And it's not for me.
Right.
And I'm pretty much, I'm more into what sort of person is like as a person to if they're a celebrity. If I like someone that's a good guy, I'll go out of my way. It's like, if they're a nice guy, I'll run around for them. I was talking to you earlier about the old Charles Kennedy thing. I went into a barrister's chambers in London and a barrister bought his brother a suit. Then his brother went to work in Parliament in Charles Kennedy's office. So I went to see his brother there. And then Charles were sat there having a sandwich, so I pitched him. And I used the old, you can't afford not to, line on him.
Because
yeah. Once you've got a good line, you can use it many, 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 many times, yeah, can't you? So he had one. And then as the story progressed, he famously had a gold lining in his suit and he was taking his jacket off at the conference, the Lib conference, and you could see my label. It was plastered in all the newspapers. It was a big shot, it ring Guardian and everything. And then my phone lit up because I'd got loads of customers I hadn't seen for ages. It was like it were on news with it all. And I got quite a lot just from that bizarre deciding to put my gold lining in.
And did that surprise you? Because you're not someone who's sort of setting out to use social media or advertising in that way, you know, you're using word of mouth. Did it surprise you that just, you know, someone flashing the label as a suit could have such an impact?
Yeah, because with marketing, for example, years ago I went on a TV programme in Yorkshire, which were Enterprise, Krista Ackroyd carried on, and it was about running your business. And at that stage, it started up in Leeds, and they were running around all Leeds lawyers. And I got through to televised finals sort of thing and became, they did some little videos of us making suits in Cleckheaton where we were at the time. And then me popping out to Lupton Fawcett and meeting a couple of lawyers. And that went out and I didn't enjoy the whole experience, but I thought, this is going to put me on the map. I got one comment from it and that was from the lady where I played football from the Sunday afternoon who were making chip butties, and she went, I saw you on telly. Nobody else saw it because we were at 5:30.
Just
went,
funny, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a strange one is advertising because you can have your greatest idea and it goes nowhere. And then you can have a bit of luck where someone's actually just taking his jacket off. I mean, the chances of that photograph being taken at that second and being put up. So, yeah.
Brilliant. And have you... You are a Yorkshireman, as you said, and I think it's probably be a recurring theme in these podcasts that I have lived in Yorkshire for I think about 30 years. All my children are born here, and so they said, you know, if the day ever comes, then they might put a word in to allow me to stay, because that's the idea. You know, you've got to be born and bred in Yorkshire. So you've always lived and worked, apart from sort of trips down, and always been in Yorkshire.
Yeah, yeah. But why would you move?
Well, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's the centre of the universe,
And so sort of more broadly, is that why you're a Leeds United supporter?
Yes, yes. I was born in Birstall, which is probably 10 to 12 miles from Ellen Road. But they were a great team then, weren't they? You know, when I were a kid, you got Lorimer, Clark, you know, Jones, we could go through team name, yeah. The old team, Cooper. But they were the great Leeds United team. And
the football players used to wear suits back then, didn't they?
When you look into the old Leeds history, Jack Charlton used to sell suit lengths and get his tailor to measure players after the match. It was his little side or something.
Because, really?
Yeah, footballers didn't get a lot of money. And anybody who could get any form of earning an extra few quid would do.
Right. So you've always been Leeds. Have you ever worn a suit to a game?
If it's funny, because I prefer cheap seats. Everybody likes to be in the cop, you know, for the atmosphere. But I've got...
I just like a ticket.
Yeah, well, these days you can't get a ticket, can you? But I've got a good friend of mine who I met through tailoring who's got a corporate box, and he's always giving me... I've said, put me on bench. So if anybody drops out, he'll give me a ring and say, do you want to come? And I'll shoot across. But
excellent.
It's beg, steal or borrow, isn't it, for a Leeds ticket?
How do you describe your... Because it's not a factory. You've been there. Is it a workshop? I mean, what? How do you describe a tailor's habitat?
I would probably say a workshop. And up to a certain size, I mean, we use ours more for developing. And I work with another tailor in Leeds who's making me suits at the moment.
Yeah.
But obviously, keep all the gear, because there's nothing better than to go down and cut a bit of cloth and play around with a new idea.
Yeah.
A workshop, I would say... There's less and less tailors around, and the benefits for both. So when a lot of people start saying what's best, you know, when you're in a bigger environment, a bigger factory, you've got better pressing equipment, you've got better machinery, because, you know, these days, if you've got a pocket, a machine that'll put a pocket in, it'll do a better pocket than someone can do by hand. So there's parts, in my opinion, where... You need your hand skills and hand sewing, and that's where the machine will do it better. For example, pressing, you know, your pressing equipment these days, is that evolved? That you're going to press a suit better with modern pressing equipment than you would with an old hand iron.
Right.
And back in the day, God, how far do you want to go back? I mean, Burton Tailoring, Hudson Road, Leeds, had the biggest factory in the world.
Yeah.
And their canteen were the size of a football field. The whole fleet of vans, you know, and it were like in them days, nearly everybody in Leeds worked for somebody in the tailoring industry. And then that shrunk with the...
And was that Burton Tailoring, was that Burton Shops?
Yeah.
As well, that's all, because...
Yeah. They had their own fleet of vans. It was like so far ahead of its time, what were Burton Tailoring?
Is that because Yorkshire's got a rich history of textiles? Because I think Double Two shirts is based here, where we are today, where the studio is, in Wakefield.
Double Two shirts were named because you would get a spare collar and a spare set of cuffs with every shirt.
Oh, is that what? I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So that's your Double Two. And when we're talking about you got your cottonswood in Lancashire.
Yeah.
And then your worsteds and your wools were in Yorkshire, and there still is a few really good mills, but obviously it's shrunk from everybody worked in it to now you've a few little niche mills running. The reason being, and I, when I was younger, used to think, oh, it's Yorkshire wool, you know, but your Yorkshire wool comes from a sheep, and that's for carpets because it's a thick, a Yorkshire sheep is in a cold climate.
Right.
Your Australian and merino wool is your finer wool.
Right.
So that yarn comes across to Yorkshire. And the reason it's better in Yorkshire is because we've got soft water. So when we're finishing it, in the finishing process, you get a softer finish. And back in the day, we'd have, you'd have your spinners, you'd have your weavers, you'd have your finishers, you'd have four or five little cottage industries where your cloth would go from one to the other to the other.
Oh, but all within sort of a locality.
All within the West Yorkshire area, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
And another thing, now you've got me beating my drum.
No, do.
Yorkshire fabric, Huddersfield fabric, is one of the few things where actually the name of the place it's made adds a lot of value to it, i.e. Sheffield steel.
Yeah.
But if you put Huddersfield, woven in Huddersfield, sell it anywhere in the world, it is... You know, it's a speciality. I mean, the Japanese go mad for it. And it is because, there again, the Japanese have taken a lot of time to learn about what's great, and then it's brought to Yorkshire for the fabric. So they're literally, your Yorkshire merchants send fabric all over the world to different tailors.
Really?
So apart from your tailor, you've got these merchants who literally...
Oh, so who are actually making the cloth to send out?
The merchants... What happened was the mills were a bit clogs to clogs and never invested. And then, so merchants then decided to order bolts of cloth. So let's say they'd order
And a bolt is the roll.
Yeah, a piece of cloth is generally about 65 yards. And if you're going to a tailor shop, you pick from a bunch and you're looking through...
What we're talking about, bunch, is a little sort of like an A5 pamphlet, isn't it? They're open,
yeah.
Hinged at the top.
And yeah. It's got feeler swatches, and you can look them.
Yeah, it's got little rectangular swatches of material.
Yeah.
And on the back, it has information about...
The weight.
The weight.
And generally some silly number that they've made up that's complicated. And they don't actually put anything on it, which does my head in. They don't actually put the design on half of it. It's like, why not, as a learning environment, put this is a quarter of an inch herring bone or this is a dot tooth, but they do.
And what's the difference? Sorry, Kevin. What's the difference in... What difference is the weight of material make in ounce?
Well...
Is that thickness or...?
It's 30 grams to an ounce. Right. Roughly, so yeah. 10 ounces, 300 grams, roughly, that's pretty as near as you're going to get it with your decimal. And,
yeah.
You know. And generally, if you go back to Burton days, everybody used to have 18, 19-ounce suits, big overcoats, and that was because it was bloody cold and you didn't have central heating at home and you'd go to work outside and you'd get wrapped up. So these days, you've got better outerwear, better coats that you put over the suit. But as we've got these... Central heated offices and clients better, people, and there's been a little bit of global warming, so the weight has dropped. And in the UK, you might have two different suits. You might have a winter suit and a summer suit.
Right.
Customers that have got a few will have a lightweight suit.
Yeah.
And then they get a lot of people like yourself who'll travel, so you'll think, God, if I'm going over to Dubai, I need a really light suit. Yeah. So you might go 8, 9 ounce. And when you're here in the middle of winter, it's nice to have something a little bit richer and warmer, yeah. So you can break it down into the weight of the cloth, and then you've got all different attributes. I'm wearing a mohair suit at the moment, and it's crisp, so it bounces back. So there again, with your tailor, he's going to say, what are you going to be wearing your suit for? And he's going to ask you these questions, you know, and if you do go abroad, he's going to suggest a different fabric. Summer weddings, for example, you don't want to be, you know, too hot, and you also want something that's not going to crease. So most of the racks suits are down to a price. That's why they wear out. I mean, the amount of people I get will say, I've spent a fortune on this suit, but it's worn out on the fork. Or
yeah.
So a lot of the sense of having a good made-to-order suit, tailor-made or made-to-measure or bespoke, is they use better fabrics, so they last longer. So your cost to wear, you pay a little bit more up front.
But it lasts a bit longer.
But then it lasts so you can build your wardrobe up.
And does the weight of the cloth make a difference to the design you can have? Or
sort of. It all creates, you've got your three parts, which is your fabric, your design, and your measures. And they all sort of amalgamate and create a look. So if you were looking for something Peaky Blinder-ish,
yeah,
for example, you'd want a good solid cloth because that's the look. You couldn't have a lightweight fabric because it would literally, you know, it wouldn't hold up.
Yeah.
You know, you look back to your Al Capone and that, you know, and that big solid. And we used to use thicker interlinings because with a thicker cloth, with a heavier cloth, you put a stronger line in a stronger chest piece. It would be, we used to call them bulletproof. And there were a guy called Barney Goodman in Sheffield, and If you spot someone from Sheffield, you say, do us a Barney Goodman. And it was just a very solid suit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you took it off, it'd stand up on its own. But people get, and I like them solid suits, but you've got to be good when you're making a solid suit. But
as you say, things have changed, haven't they, in that we all have, you know, central heating and our offices are air-conditioned, and so you don't want that heavier suit. And or we want a variety of suits, don't we? And that must be a challenge. When someone comes in, do you look, and how do you sort of guide someone in terms of being to your workshop? You've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different cloths.
Mm.
How do you even begin to sort of look and say this one because you can't just sort of start at one end and you can choose a sort of a colour range, but what are the things that your experienced eye looks for?
I suppose subliminally, and we all have whatever business you're in, you've got you soon take things away out of the equation and work your customer. So if you walk through the door, you're a professional guy wearing a suit, first time I met you, you know, I know you're a lawyer, I know you know exactly what's going on, so we're straight into, for me, I don't like them to be too fancy, so it's something that's classic. Sometimes people in London, your legal market is classic, but if you go to West End, then people might want a little bit more colour and a little bit more vibrancy.
Yeah.
And do you know what's amazing now as we're getting into the world of Pinterest? You know, you click on in Italy and you see these light blue jackets and tight fitting jackets and white buttons, and you realise how, just like we've got a language, you know, different language in every country, we have a different clothing language, we have a different what works and what don't work, you know. And so generally, once you know how many suits somebody's got or what the profession is or what they're wearing it for, you can start getting your head around it. And even with weddings, I always like to sell somebody a suit for a wedding that's a bit special that they can wear after, because there's no point having a white linen suit for your wedding unless you're absolutely hinted, because you're going to wear it once.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Like a wedding dress. So do you always see your customers? Because, you know, what happened with you in COVID? I mean, how did that impact you?
COVID, business died for me on that. Luckily, being a Yorkshire man, I'd saved a little bit of money for a rainy day and I'd got a couple of other things going along. We spent a lot of time in COVID looking into working online and could we sell suits online, and I've half built a training portal for people coming into tailoring. So I kept myself busy, but the problem with COVID is that everybody learned to sit there doing, as we're doing, a little chit-chat, but they could be wearing their underpants, you know, they're just like, put a jacket on, a shirt, and then...
Yeah, I suppose the need for suits.
Yeah. It's coming back now, because people are now getting for the mental health. A lot of people are wanting to get booked and suited and out there, because otherwise we're all just growing old quickly. It's all right sitting in your home office, but you don't get all that extra. When you go out and you meet people and you get extra business, lawyers, anybody who's out there, you meet people. And when you sat home, I think you dilute that. And you dilute that bit where you chat about other things. Because, like, if it's online and it can be a shorter conversation, you do.
Yeah, you're right. I think one of the problems with online, it's far too direct. People don't have that sort of chit-chat before a meeting or after. It's just straight in. And also, as I think you were saying there, I think it's... I love it when you put on a suit and you feel good.
Yeah.
You know, it gives you... I think there's the opportunity with a good suit. I say opportunity because I don't think all suits, you know, people have are good. There's the opportunity with a good suit to make you feel just that bit more special, isn't it? I think it ups your sort of confidence.
But you've got to dress. You've got to dress to fit in with the people you're working with, which goes back to, let's say, your junior barristers and, you know, people going into a law firm. You don't want to go into a top law firm in a cheap suit. You don't want to be the lad that looks like you don't belong. So, whereas if you go into a wedding and you're a plumber and you're going to wear one suit and that's it, and you all go buy cheap suits online, it works for that occasion. You know, you're not trying to be anything else but a lad who's put a suit on. And if you generally don't wear a suit and you put a suit on, people, you look smart to everybody who knows you, because that person, that template's a different...
And when did you sort of get... How did you become a tailor?
Well, my story, when my dad had a successful business and he got 14 shops in a factory, and this was in the early 70s. So think Billy Elliot.
Yeah.
Just as I joined, everything died on its ass.
Yeah.
So he went bankrupt because all his shops stopped selling suits because it was literally a Yorkshire recession. It was tough. I mean, people going about tough, but it was tough in Yorkshire in that little spell. And we got, do you have 3 day a week as well at the same time?
It's an interesting thing because not living in Yorkshire at the time, I don't think that many people realise what actually was happening in Yorkshire. At that I was a young lad then. I was in Essex, I was in my teens, and the contrast now living in Yorkshire is very stark, because I can talk to people like you, talk about it more. Then a huge number of the police who were being bussed up to Yorkshire to manage all the strikes over a year or more were all from Essex. So in Essex, it was a time of sort of abundance, because I knew loads of people who were earning absolute shedloads of police, or the police would, go out spending money. And I had no concept. My only concept was seeing on the TV a line of police and striking miners. And it was only when we moved up here and got to know more people, you realise how oppressive it was, and how stark the contrast. As you say, 3 day week, people, a lot of people had, no money at all. And yet there was this huge gulf in the country, north south divide. And I think that still persists, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it must have been tough then.
Well, yeah. I mean, because the same had been bankrupt. So I went from being a 15 year old lad who was going to be just rocking up at his dad's firm and living a life in the boss's son,
yes,
firm, to literally we spent a lot of time running around. We did a lot of work in men's clubs in them days, where we'd literally go on a Friday night and take his fabrics and sell 10 or 12 silks in a working men's club, on a conservative club, or midweek club, whatever. But it was very much all about survival. It was, you weren't working to earn money, you were working because he'd got a small, team with him, who were like family, who'd been there for years, and you're just working to try and
keep going.
Yeah, it molds you. I think the problem is today that I think it's the entitled generation that get too much too easy, and my worry for them is how they're going to cope as they go through life, and it stops happening. Whereas I do think my generation, born in 1961 and before that, we had to work for everything we got. We had to fight for everything we got. So I do think it puts you in a good state of mind when things go wrong, just to knuckle down and start again, if you know what I mean.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think it's very difficult. Although saying that, I really wouldn't want to be a lot younger than I am now, because I think that the issues surrounding, just the immediacy of the internet and influencers and these people, everything is in sort of more immediate satisfaction and everything's meant to be easier. I don't think it in many ways is. I think there's so much pressure on
people. All the right things in the wrong order. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
We had a girlfriend, and we'd have to get the balls to ask her out, and that would be a massive thing, to ask a girl for a day.
Yeah.
It was a massive thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You got to actually go up to her and look at her, and she could say yes or no. And these days, you can send a few little things out, little jokes, and create loads of, insincere relationships. And it's that everything goes too quick. We could go on one here. We could talk forever.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult, isn't it? The contrast. So what about your children? What do you see for them? Are they going to follow footsteps?
I'm now playing around with my business, because in lockdown it cut down, and then I thought, I'll retire, and then you turn your phone off, and then all of a sudden you start getting, you put your phone back on, should I say, and then you get people popping up out of woodwork and eat two or three soups. I'm back in it. Can you come down? And then the part of my business is I like the people. For my children to get involved, the numbers would have to marry up, because I've made more money in property in lockdown than I've done in tailoring all my life. So at some stage, it's got to get where it works.
Yeah.
I mean, I did have a good spell back in the, probably 2000, when all the barristers' chambers were absolutely piled out. I'm not sure about the dating on it, but it's when we had fax machines and computers. Computers were coming out slowly, so everybody went back to chambers. So if I went into Manchester, Birmingham, or London, and I'd be selling you a silk, you say, oh, well, I'm here, I'll have a walk around chambers. And you get me another 4 to 5 customers just knocking on the door. I've got a tailor here. Oh, I need something.
Yeah.
And that's, so as it's all evolved, I've got to find a way of moulding my business where I'd want my children to come in and make money, because they've all got jobs where they do okay. So mine would have to be where, do you know what, if you come and work with me, it could be really good.
Is there an age range? You know, are people comfortable with that personal sort of shopper, or do you think people like the distance? You know, is that an age thing?
You can't with both. They're quite happy now spending north of £200 on a T-shirt online, ordering it, and it comes. But then the younger end, who I measure up, just absolutely love it. And then once it's getting them on board. Back in the day, your dad would go to a tailor and it'd take you for your first suit, and then you'd be introduced to a tailor.
Yeah.
And it's all that. It's overused in marketing, isn't it? The old tale of the half-rimmed glasses and, and the old, you know, painting and chalking. But that's basically how it was. And you go, going, it'd be a family thing. And then obviously, as ready-to-wear came out, it just killed everything. Because back in the days of, when I'm saying about the Billy Elliot and the recession, the all of a sudden ready-mades were coming in from places like Poland and Czechoslovakia, and they were bringing them in really cheap, and they weren't very good. But obviously, your working man would have a go at one because it were a bit cheaper, because you've got to bear in mind, a working man always puts himself last, and his suit's last. It's going to be kids, mortgage, Christmas, everything, and then himself. I mean, that's generally how it was in them days.
And do you see an international market for you, or is that?
It's there if I want it. It's a lifestyle thing of, do I want to go? Because I've got American lawyers who say, come over here and get you 10 or 12. And you think, do you really want to be going over? And because then if I, the danger is with social media, you get inquiries from all over. And
yeah.
So be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
So it'd be great for my kids to go over, but it's got to stack up. And there is some good tailors in every major city. I do think British is best, but you've got to weigh up. For me, if you can find someone, if you're in New York, who's a good tailor, where you can have that relationship, it's better than somebody flying over on a plane and measuring you up.
If you see a suit, do you reckon there's a discernible difference between, you know, if I got four blokes standing here and said, these suits are all from different countries, do you think there is a certain
100%
style?
Yeah. I mean, when people go to China, places like that, Hong Kong, and they'll get a suit made, and the suit will be shocking. And the reason is, they don't have the right equipment, they try and do it too cheap, and they've no idea what, like I were talking about, what do you want, and I'd get my head around.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with a global market, your Americans like things that are too big, it don't fit in shiny clothes.
Yeah.
You know, your English guy wants something a little bit more heavier and a little bit more structure in it. But even, like, you go to pleats, I mean, at the moment in the UK, it was flat fronted trousers and a clean look.
Yeah.
You know, in America, they're still on pleats and a fuller cut. So it is what it, horses for courses. If you get a suit abroad, you don't pay a lot.
It won't necessarily be as bespoke.
No, yeah. But they're okay for what they are, but you can, as you see, different suits and different levels. But I've seen some of my customers who, quite a few, have had a Savile Row suit handmade and spent $6,000, and they prefer my suits. And I'm not saying I'm better than Savile Row, because I've also had customers who've bought something off the peg and they love it. It's what's right for you.
Yeah.
I'll look and I'll think, oh, there needs extra shoulder pad in there, or he's got a square back neck, or he's, you know, I look at everything and see what's wrong, but that's because it's my trade.
Your job.
Yeah.
And when you're not wearing a suit, what's your go-to piece of clothing? Cardigan, hoodie, you know, jeans.
We're wearing this awful place, aren't we? When they did this dress down in London, it was carnage. Because men of a certain age didn't know how to dress down.
Or
walking around looking a sod. But I think you get away with, you've got to have your slides. You've got to have your Adidas trainers.
Right.
You've got to have Adidas trainers.
Oh, okay, I've failed. Failed already.
But just a pair of jeans, nice tight-fitting jeans, and a T-shirt and I mean, there again, if you want to go out, you can wear a pair of a nice black jeans or a pair of a white shirt. Always works if you're going out, but probably a t-shirt. I mean,
it's interesting, isn't it? You can go out now. I mean, younger, the thought of going out somewhere vaguely smart and it be a t-shirt counting, and yet you can now look very smart.
You wouldn't get let in, would you? When we used to go nightclubbing, if you want smart, you would get in with it.
You can get in.
Yeah.
Well, you can get in with trainers.
Yeah. I think that again, it's how you put it together. It's like you've got to learn and listen to what people say. Just ask your daughter and your son's opinion. Different people's opinion. And you know, sometimes, I mean, I can wear something and I'll get mixed reviews. Some people will think it looks really great and some people won't. So if you're comfortable in what you're wearing yourself, that's 90% of it. Because if you're comfortable, you actually look better because you're wearing it and it's not wearing you. Whatever you put on, if you feel good in it, it's okay, isn't it?
So you've talked about, you know, feeling good and what makes you feel good and confident. And I'm interested because you've been a lifelong supporter of Leeds and I haven't. So confession, because
wash your mouth.
I'm sorry because I'm from Birmingham. One of the first teams I ever saw was Birmingham. I can remember Trevor Francis being signed and watching him. Then we lived near Villa and I supported them for a long, long time. When we moved up to Leeds was not, I don't like the word nice, Leeds was not a nice football team. You know, you had players who were being arrested for fights and doing much, much worse things. And when my sons came along, I wasn't keen, genuinely wasn't keen on them supporting Leeds because back 22 years ago, they weren't a very nice club.
I was at Pine 3 weeks ago and I was sat talking to Jonathan Woodgate, old PE teacher, right?
Yeah.
And he was saying, we're a bad lad, you know, we're bullying other kids at school, he says. But he says, I took him out of school football team for a couple of weeks and he started behaving. And it's like, you know, the Woodgates and the boys, what got me with that, where you've got an asset worth a lot of money and why they haven't got somebody going out minding them?
Well,
beggars belief. And why I feel a bit sorry for a lot of these modern footballers, where they're earning a fortune but they're not in the real world. Well, it's distorted, it's the reality, you know. It's like back in the day when Ferguson were there at Man U, we'd have them all in digs with somebody, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that were the way it was. But these days it's...
But what I was leading to is, you go to the ground, there just seems a resurgence of positivity. Do you think that's a Yorkshire? I always worry coming from elsewhere that aren't enough people in Yorkshire talk positively enough about Yorkshire. I don't think
is that everywhere though. Maybe it's Yorkshire because you've got more experience of being out of Yorkshire. But I just can't stand negative people and at a football match, wherever you are, to get on players' backs. I don't think you've ever anything to be gained by getting on somebody's back.
I think Yorkshire people are very positive. I just don't think that Yorkshire people sing the praises of Yorkshire or its football team enough when they're elsewhere. Everybody thinks, oh, the world's heard of Manchester, but they've heard of Manchester United. I go abroad, people have no idea where Manchester is. And I talk about sort of Yorkshire people hiding their ability, their passion under a bushel. You go elsewhere, and as you said, you go to London, people love it because you're a Yorkshireman.
Mm.
And they love Yorkshire people's accents. And I think, you know, I haven't lived here. I'm not from here. I love Yorkshire. I think it's just, I can't speak with enough passion about Yorkshire and Leeds. But I do think Yorkshire should be more bold, confident about itself outside Yorkshire. I think in Yorkshire, it is.
But who does that? Who's your ambassador? Because Yorkshire got, I think we won as many gold medals as Scotland.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But who's out there shouting that? Why are we shouting that? You know.
But I think that's what I'm sort of coming.
Huddersfield. I'm talking to you about Huddersfield Fabrics. Amount of people have no idea that Huddersfield Fabric is the best in the world. When you're driving in on the M62 coming into Yorkshire, why don't it say home of the world's best fabrics? Well, you know, unless we unless we tell people that they're not gonna know.
No, I think that is that's very true, and I think it's a good way of rounding up. Of you know, I think Yorkshire is an amazing place. Dale, you make incredible suits, and it's been lovely talking to you. It's fascinating. There's so much about these things, and I love the fact that we know each other through a mutual friend. That you've been involved in so many different aspects of the law. You've made suits for judges. You've made suits for ministers. You've made suits for so many different people, and all these things sort of interlink, and our lives cross in different ways, don't they? And I find that fascinating. And then there's all the intricacies of what you do in making a suit, and I find that interesting as comparison with, you know, if I'm drafting a contract, and there are lots of little intricacies about that. We're not so different. We're trying to create something that is bespoke, aren't we?
Yeah, you can't do an off-the-back contract, can you?
Well, I don't think you can. And the thing we love about our jobs is meeting people.
Yeah.
And I hope people have enjoyed listening to you and our conversation with you. Dale Rhodes, lovely, lovely bloke. I hope we see each other for many, many years to come, both in suits and at Leeds United, yeah. Preferably when we're Premiership and European Cup and
Champions of Europe.
Well, there's the World Championship, isn't it? Yeah. We can be champions of the world.
Exactly.
You know, and that would be so good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yorkshire people actually saying, "I can't do it. I can't do a Yorkshire accent. I still do a Brummie accent, but yeah. Yorkshire." So yeah, Yorkshire champions. But yeah. It's, anyway, Dale, great to have you on, and I hope you've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thank you for joining me for today's Barton Legal podcast. Please make sure you follow the show in your podcast app to get new episodes as soon as they're released. We'll be tackling another important topic in this month's Barton Legal webinar, and you can register for free and watch back our previous webinars at bartonlegal.com. Why don't you connect with me on LinkedIn and follow Barton Legal to keep up to date with all the legal trends and news? I look forward to speaking to you again in the next Barton Legal podcast.